All right, welcome back to another episode of Save It for the Blind podcast. I'm Jeff Smith, and I'm with our regular co-host, Carson Odegaard. We have a special guest, our regional biologist in Northeastern California, Greg Heidemann. Greg, for those that may or may not know you, can you just give us a quick background of your career with CWA, where you've been, what you're doing now?
Yeah. I've kind of been all over the state. My career, almost been with CWA 20 years. Started out as a volunteer, kind of got going with that through UC Davis when I was going to school there. Started out kind of with the banding crew, rocket netting, pintail. That was in 2004, really, when I first kind of got it going. And that kind of morphed into a wetland survey position. Started out in 2006. And just about that time, we really started getting up and going in Southern California. So I think Chad, you guys had on a little bit ago, had just wrote a NACA grant for Northeast or for Imperial Valley and another one for San Jacinto Valley. We had a big Wildlife Conservation Board grant from the initial work at San Jacinto. And so I moved down there for about a year and a half, implemented all those projects. After that, I was down there for a couple of years, moved back to Sacramento for a couple of years, implemented a bunch of work all over the Sacramento Valley with help from Chad. And then I've been up here in Northeastern California since 2012. So it's almost been 13 years now. It's gone by pretty fast. So
gosh, it's been that long. That's crazy.
20 years. It's almost been 20 years. I've been full time since, it was like 2006. So yeah, it's pretty wild. Pretty wild.
Yeah. It seems like yesterday you just moved up to the Northeast zone. So.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's, I love it up here. I mean, it's beautiful country. I'd always spent a lot of time up this way prior to moving up here and hunting up in the Klamath Basin since I was, 10 years old. So coming up here and being able to take an active role in improving wetland habitat has been great. I mean, I love it. So
are you from up there?
I'm from Monterey originally. Oh, okay. I grew up in Monterey. So yeah, I grew up hunting the grasslands and then we had some family up this way. So we did spend quite a bit of time up in Northeastern California, McLeod area. So spent quite a bit of time up here as a kid running up the hill and hunting Klamath in the early 2000s, late 90s. I mean, it was a lot of water on the landscape then and had some great hunts and great times. So
Greg hasn't been sharing all those Northeast honey holes with me. I'm a little jealous.
No, I got to keep those under my hat a little bit.
My old stomping grounds. But talking about the Northeast zone, I mean, what's it looking like on the habitat on the ground this year?
Yeah, I mean, habitat's looking really good, right? I mean, like we talked about, I mean, the latest production numbers came out. I mean, there's the most, I was just looking at some of the data. I mean, there's the most mallards up here in Northeastern California that they've counted in 30 years on the BPOP estimate. So that's pretty impressive. I mean, there's a lot of water on the landscape. It's spread out in all the valleys. Everything's looking really good. I mean, it's relatively been a pretty cool summer. So things have lasted. They just got an inch and a half in rain over in Big Valley and Fall River last week. So it's been a wild ride. It's keeping that water around. There's duck broods of all stages right now. They're just up there cruising around Butte Valley and Klamath yesterday. I mean, there's everything from, ducks flopping around, a little ducklings just looks like they just hatched out. So it's looking really good. I would say by and large, I mean, at Klamath Basin, obviously they had a bunch of water on the landscape early on. That's kind of dwindling a little bit. They're getting some flow through, but the hope is, like I said, it's been pretty cool so far and haven't had any big botulism outbreaks yet. Hoping that kind of holds up, but all in all, I'm pretty impressed. I mean, I think some of the brood counts speak for themselves. I mean, you look at some of this data, most mallards since 1992, which we got access to here. I think gadwall is like the third most they've ever recorded for Northeastern California since 92. Same thing like the honkers, Canada geese. I mean, highest since, I think it's the fourth highest ever counted up this way. So I think we should be excited about that. 3 years of decent rainfall is, I think, starting to really show, and we're seeing some of the benefits of that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm excited. I also saw the Canada geese and the other numbers too, but, you know, hopefully that contributes to, you know, some better bags this year. But I think just in general, just more water on the landscape should have all hunters just very excited about what's to come for the 25-26 season.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I want to take a step back. Can you explain what qualifies as a Northeast zone for people that may be wondering? What refuges does that encompass? What is the Northeast zone?
Yeah. So Northeast zone is basically the Northeast corner of the state. So I'm covering, you know, the area I cover, Shasta Valley, Klamath Basin, Honey Lake, you know, Big Valley, Fall River Valley, Sierra Valley. So in all areas in between there. So I, you know, we haven't done a whole lot up in Oregon yet. We could, it's a big swath of country up here. So, you know, all these little terminal basins and seasonal snowmelt fed, you know, areas. So, you know, you're talking Ash Creek, wildlife area, Honey Lake, Willow Creek, Shasta Valley, Butte Valley, Modoc Refuge, Lower Klamath, Tule Lake. So, quite a few public areas up here to run around on for sure.
And those public areas, when you start looking at public or private areas, what are you looking for? And do you kind of start in one region and branch out? Or is there particular years that, you know, there might be grant money for solar or refabbing a well or whatever? Can you kind of walk through that process of how you're picking projects and what you're trying to do up there?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I think a lot of the folks that are listening may be like, well, why don't we just put all the resources towards putting water at Klamath or so-and-so? Why are we going to these other places? And the explanation of, you know, money has to go certain ways for certain groups is definitely going to be helpful.
Recently we've concentrated a lot of like Butte Valley, Ash Creek. We've done a ton of work there in the past few years. I mean, as far as like picking areas, it's based on the funding direction. I mean, where the need is, you know, really my efforts so far have really stayed, you know, I'd say 85% of the grant funds up in Northeastern California, have been spent on public areas. So I don't have like the Sacramento Valley, the grasslands. You know, they got a big contingent of duck clubs that, you know, they're flooding up. We just don't have that up here in Northeastern California. They're kind of few and far between. There's a lot of working ranches. And as I mean, working ranches, I'm talking like flood irrigated, you know, pasture, wet meadow, you know, there's a lot of that. That's my duck club per se, versus like the Sacramento, you know, the Butte Sink or the grasslands. Like, we just don't have that contingent. You know, we've done a lot of wetland restoration work on private lands up here as well, but by and large, most of it's getting spent back on public areas. You know, as far as where the money flows, really, a lot of that's dependent on like the state. You know, where's the greatest need? Where can we get the biggest bang for our buck? Who needs the most efficiency upgrades? And, you know, like I said, as of recent, we've been spending a lot of time and funds at Ash Creek and Butte Valley. We've been working at Butte Valley. I mean, I think this is like the fourth or fifth year here, and we've gone through a couple large WCB grants, and you know, we've enhanced like a couple thousand acres. I mean, this is the stats of what we've been able to accomplish out there, and change has been great. So, as direction, we're always interested in finding interested landowners who want to improve seasonal wetland habitat, brood habitat. You know, we can help out with efficiency for flood irrigation. I don't put all my eggs in one basket at one time. We're really spread around. We just developed a new NACA grant. It was about a $3 million grant, just submitted it for funding. And I mean, I have projects from Honey Lake to Shasta Valley to Butte Valley and everywhere, Klamath and everywhere else in between. So, it's really variable as far as, you know, specific sites or where we're working. So I'm kind of all over the place, I guess.
Awesome. Now, like some of the work at like Butte Valley, I mean, what did it look like prior and now? I mean, we got 2,000 plus acres of, you know, enhanced wetlands, et cetera. Is it more huntable acreage, you know, easier to manage? What was the goal with some of those projects?
Yeah. So when we kind of first got to Butte Valley, started kind of poking around there in 14 and 15, you know, a lot of their infrastructure was just old, rusted out CMP, corrugated metal pipe. It was the old school way of doing things. They had borrowed ditches around all the wetland units, deep ditches. I mean, a lot of it was set up to back before the state got it to farm, right? So they were trying to get water off the landscape with all these deep ditches. You know, now, you know, the state took it over. Then they're trying to flood. And before they can get any water to actual seasonal habitat, they're flooding ditches 6 feet deep with water. You know, it's just not efficient, or backing it up off the bottom. You know, your well, you had wells at one end of the area and you're trying to flood 3 miles away with a deep well through open ditches that are 4, 5, 6 feet deep. It just wasn't very efficient. So some of their, you know, with their existing operating budgets, they were sort of limited to what they can spread across the landscape with the water they had. Really for fall flood up, Butte Valley is dependent on their ag wells by and large at this point to flood any kind of fall habitat. They do get some seasonal runoff come, you know, once it starts raining and snow melt. They have sometimes an ample amount of seasonal runoff, almost too much. But for the fall and during duck season, at this point, they were always dependent on running, you know, two or three wells for flood up. So when we came in, took a look at everything. We surveyed everything, tried to figure out, you know, where their deficiencies was. How can we make them more efficient? And at this point, I mean, we've spent federal money, state wildlife conservation board money. I mean, there's been millions pumped into, you know, filling all these deep ditches, rehabbing all the perimeter levees that were, you know, leaking, replacing. I think we've replaced like 80 something water control structures at Butte Valley in like last 4 years. I mean, we've installed, it was like upwards of 4 miles of water delivery pipeline, you know, off their main deep wells. So, you know, they're not running water down these open ditches for miles before it gets into a brood habitat. You know, we've upgraded all their lift pump stations and, you know, off those pumps, recirculation pipelines. So, you know, as they dry down their seasonal wetland habitat in the spring, they're taking that water and putting it into brood habitat brood habitat wetlands that we've rebuilt. So a lot of it has been efficiency related on the ground benefits. The other thing at Butte Valley, I mean, like we spoke about their ONE budgets, you know, they spent a lot of money for running the wells in the fall, and then Butte Valley, in order to get the water off the landscape during the spring, they have to actually lift it into Meese Lake. Well, it's kind of a double whammy for them, right? I mean, they're pumping on both sides of things. So one of the big things that really gave them a big shot in the arm was we've installed two solar arrays at this point it's offsetting upwards of, you know, we're talking 50 to 60 grand of pumping budget per year at rates from a couple years ago. And as everybody knows, rates don't go down very well. So, I mean, in the future, that's even going to be more meaningful for them, but it's really allowed them a shot in the arm to get the water on and off the seasonal wetlands, put it in the brood habitat, keep brood habitat, you know, sustained during the summer, and really spread the water across the landscape in the fall. Now, I mean, they're flooding quite a bit more acreage now versus what they had been prior to, you know, 2015-16. You know, a lot of the major work has been going on over their last 4 to 5 years. So it's I think they're pretty happy with what's going on over there, and I'm definitely happy with it. It's really transformed the core couple thousand acres of what they've had there. We've pretty much rebuilt it all at this point. The core group of core wetland habitat there at Butte Valley. So pretty happy with the results.
That's awesome.
I think, yeah, it's gone really well. So we're hoping
in those areas, is it all free roam? Is there blinds that people can go into? Kind of like, what's the hunt situation?
Yeah. So Butte Valley's type B area. So there's no reservation system. Yeah, basically have these little shacks. You grab a yellow card.
Other than opener, there's reservations.
Yeah, other than opener, there's no reservations the rest of the year. After that, you just pull up, grab your yellow card, and go out hunting. You know, we did install as part of a WCB grant from the first phase from a couple of years ago, about 3 years ago. We installed about a dozen concrete blinds, you know, lids, seats, you know, so there is some of those scattered across the area. We installed all those. I think there's about a dozen, if not 14, at this point spread out all over the area out there. But other than that, it's just free roam. You just kind of go do your thing. I think, I'm pretty excited this year. We planted about, MB-HIP, the nesting bird habitat incentive program allowed for the planting of about 400 acres of winter wheat last year. It was a pretty wet year at View Valley. Some of it went underwater for a little bit longer than we were hoping, but a pretty good crop did come off. So I'm pretty excited this year that when they do go to flood some of that, the hunting should be pretty dynamite. So
yeah, that's awesome.
It's a cool refuge. I need to go back out there. I probably hunted it when we must have been started going out there in 2015, 2016, way back when. And I had some great hunts out there. Not a lot of people would go out there. And that was always a question. You go out there and you have to figure out where the water was.
Right.
If the refuge sits right at the base of this big kind of mountain range and you watch these birds work and lose them into the trees and they come out, and it's just a cool area to hunt. I think it gets a little bit overlooked with being, 20 minutes from Klamath and 30 right. minutes from Tule Lake. A lot of people think of that. But the also thing is, being a type B, it's a little bit kind of strange to get on as compared to a type A or a type C. But if people are up there and have the ability to get on, it's worth a look around for sure.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, like you said, I think it does get overlooked with the Klamath Basin being so close. I think it's definitely an underutilized area. And I encourage folks to go check it out this year. I think, I'm pretty excited as well. Like the place has been in a constant state of construction over the last 4 to 5 years. I mean, large scale construction. So, some of their, we're trying to get the water off certain areas early so we can get in there and work. And, they're moving water around to try to accommodate us to get in there and finish up construction. This year, by and large, we'll be done with a lot of the large scale stuff in their core block. And it's going to allow managers to kind of do their thing as far as getting water off and leaving it longer on some of the areas, germinate some more better timothy or irrigate and not have to worry about flooding us, allowing us to get in there to move a bunch of dirt in a short period of time. I mean, that's my construction window up in Northeastern California is always pretty tight, right? I mean, by the time it dries up, it's usually July, and then, the state and feds, everybody wants to flood up here in early September for the opener or whatnot. So I got a very short window, and I think they're just as excited for me to get out of there and be done with a lot of things and let them kind of do their own thing and manage, how they want to versus accommodating us to get in there and finish all these projects up. So I think that's going to be be excited to get out of there, I guess, and let them kind of do their thing.
Now, like on some of your designs, do they differ from like the Northeast zone from when you did projects in SoCal?
On a Northeastern as a large, not just speaking, Butte Valley is pretty flat. I would say that's fairly comparable to a lot of the valley refuges. I mean, you got a big flat area with Butte Valley's old lake bed. So that's by and large really flat, very similar in configuration to the valley. But I work in a lot of different areas, and obviously I'm kind of up here in the hills. So there is a lot of topography compared to the valley, which is, a lot of it's like, okay, we're trying to work on wet meadow habitat. Well, I got, 3, 4, 5 feet of fall and across 100 acres, and I'm trying to step water down a hill and irrigate it and spread it out and, create depressional wetland habitat versus flooding, 100, 200 acres in one spot. So there is a lot of variability, and a lot of different things as far as, just not being able to put a big chunk of water. There's nothing flat up here per se,
right?
Other than a few of the areas. So, there's a lot of different tactics. I mean, natural runoff is by and large, how most of the areas and duck clubs, some of the ranches, I mean, that's where they get their water. There's not a lot of irrigation districts. They're not ordering water up here. It's either what is rainfall and it flows through the property, or they're pumping it out of the river or deep wells. They don't have the ability to just order water. So it's a, like anything below Shasta Dam, there is a mandated water up here. There's not. If it doesn't rain there's nothing's going to be flooded, or it's going to be hard for these guys to irrigate. So, you have to take that into account when you're designing and trying to spread water across the landscape in some of these wetland designs that we're working on. So there is, yeah, it's quite a bit different. It can be quite a bit different. In some places it's no different. So, yeah, it's just variable depending on where I'm at.
We are accepting applications for our fall hunt program that includes dove, pheasant, waterfowl, pig, deer, and more. Go to calwaterfowl.org to apply today. August 16th is our deadline for all dove hunts and one of our big game hunts. So apply today before the deadline. Some of our upcoming events, we have a veteran fun shoot at Grizzly Ranch on August 9th. It's 100% free for anyone that has served in the military. It includes lunch and clays. All you have to do is bring your own shells. calwaterfowl.org. Go to the events tab and sign up today. Some of our other events that we have going on, we have Bingo and Brews August 21st in Lodi. August 21st, we have our Watsonville Banquet, and August 23rd, Panisha Banquet. And then our August 24th event is the Chico Shoot and BBQ. Again, calwaterfowl.org, and come to one of our events or sign up for hunts. And what's your favorite part of the area to work in? Is it like Modoc, Klamath, Shasta Valley? If you were to pick one, what's your favorite out of all of them and why?
You know, my favorite projects, I would say like Ash Creek and Butte Valley. I mean, I've spent a lot of time, and CWA has spent a lot of resources and grant funding to completely overhaul those areas. So like Butte Valley, I was describing, you know, came up trying to see what they had initially to what they have now and what we've been able to develop. And I think that's pretty cool to see. I mean, the benefits that have been realized at this point. Ash Creek, I spent a lot of time at Ash Creek hunting myself. I enjoy Big Valley. You know, Ash Creek it's kind of a special refuge up here in Region 1. You know, it's one of the few that has access to fall water for flooding up. So they're probably the best off outside of maybe Willow Creek for spraying that water out during the fall and for hunting. So that's one of my favorite areas, to work on. You know, it's, developing all these wetlands and from, you know, surveying it to designing it, to building it and then seeing it flooded that's my favorite part of the job. Pretty rewarding to see that water spread out and, these units flooded up. So
is there big projects that happened in, the last 5 or so years that people would recognize, whether it's at, you know, Honey Lake or Shasta Valley, or what's some of the bigger ones that we've completed? I know we talked about Butte Valley a lot, but what are some of the other ones, like bigger scale?
Yeah. I mean, so we spent a lot of time at Butte Valley, as we described. I mean, Ash Creek, same thing. I mean, I've been through all the seasonal wetland units on the entire area. We've either rebuilt them, replaced infrastructure, new pipelines, worked on all the wells. You know, we helped out with a couple of the big floodplain pond and plug projects, planted grain, you know, so we've been through by and large, like most all of the wetland habitat at Ash Creek, the managed wetland habitat for sure. At this point. So, you know, we've used NACA funds, North American Wetland Conservation Act, federal funding, Wildlife Conservation Board funding, California State, you know, duck stamp funded projects. We just built a new brood pond out there. Last year it's been flooded up and provided some great habitat, through this brood rearing series. So we've done a ton of work at Ash Creek as well. I mean, really, you know, but also we've, over at Lower Klamath and Tule Lake, you know, we've probably done, you know, for the most part, a lot of our work has been centered on like walking wetland units over at Tule Lake. And we've done upwards of a couple thousand acres of walking wetlands. So for those of you who don't know what a walking wetland is, that's where, you know, it's farmed for grain or, you know, potatoes or onions certain years, and then for a few years, and it's rotated into seasonal wetland habitat, or sometimes they have the water brood habitat for a period of time. So they call it walking wetlands because they're always stepping it, you know, flooding regime around the areas. So, you know, we're on those are big projects. I mean, we're coming in to a laser leveled ag field and with no ability to store water or impound water, building new perimeter levees, putting in the infrastructure so they can't flood it. And I think we've done, I was counting up the other day, close, at least 2,000 acres of walking wetlands at Tule Lake. which in the past, some of those have been the most reliable for the feds to actually flood up. So that's why it's kind of been a concentration effort for us. Initially when I first moved up here, we had spent a lot of time and grant funds over at Modoc Refuge, rebuilding a lot of the floodplain and the Grandma Tract and, like I said, the Pitt floodplain, the J Pond. Like we were initially pretty involved over there at Modoc. For the last few years, 4 or 5 years, most of our efforts have been Ash Creek, Butte Valley, Tule Lake. The last year and a half, we are now doing some work over at Honey Lake. We're going through a bunch of their wells, repairing wells. We just got a duck stamp project. Looks like it's going to be funded for some brood habitat there next year. Shasta Valley, same thing. We stepped up doing a lot of pump work, pipeline repair. The next NACA grant that I mentioned is really going to start ramping up work at Shasta Valley and Honey Lake if it's funded. So kind of branching out now, we're getting to the point of Butte Valley and Ash Creek. We worked in a lot of the wetlands and done a lot of enhancements, and there's only so much water to go around. So, we can't just keep carving out new habitat, and we want to make sure that it can be flooded. That's the biggest thing we're going to work on is actually flooded. So
I've never spent any time on Shasta Valley. What is that area like?
Shasta Valley is very interesting. I mean, it's very like fragmented wetland cells. I mean, I would be surprised outside of the three large lakes that they have kind of storage reservoirs. I'd be surprised if they have many wetland units. They're bigger than about 20 acres. I mean, some are fairly small. It's very like the topography there is all over the place. It's kind of on that backside of Mount Shasta, and you got hills and you got wetland units and you're flooding off the river. It's just very variable. Pretty cool area actually, to hunt. It is spread out. During hunting season, it does spread out guys just by the makeup of the place, how things are so spread out with little ponds here and little pond, wetland habitat there. So, it looks like this year, they got a pretty good slug of water. They were able to take off the Shasta River this year over Shasta Valley and fill up a lot of their large lakes. Bass Lake, Trout Lake are pretty well filled. They had some water in the steamboat. I think that's kind of dwindling at this point. They haven't had any recent water deliveries, but great brood production, Shasta Valley. We planted, I think it was like 260 acres of winter wheat and peas this past year, which the rains just really, those things just turned on this past winter. So the grain is like 4 feet tall and it's got an understory of peas. So I think, at some point the geese are going to get into some of that. They've been keeping, that was all part of the NBHIP, the nesting bird incentive program through the state of California, provided a grant to us to get a lot established. And the brood protection this year there was, talking to some of the managers over there was through the roof. They're keeping a lot of brood habitat supplied adjacent to some of these areas we planted in grain, provided a great nesting habitat. So I think Shasta Valley should, they should have some water, I'd imagine, this fall for hunting. Last couple of years they haven't. It's just a pretty cool area to hunt for sure.
Like those big lakes, can you walk through them or is it boat access? How do those work? I've seen some pictures of them, but I've just never been out there.
Yeah, I think you can walk in access and hunt off the banks. I think last year, I think they govern the size of the horsepower on the motors for boats, for boat hunting. You might want to check on that. I think that's been kind of in flux a little bit, but I know some guys that do run some mud boats and dive into the Tules and hunt the edge of the lake. As far as I know, they're both huntable. And I think, I've heard some guys have some good reports of guys being successful in some of the lakes over there.
Yeah.
The deeper water lakes. Like you're not walking around them. They're pretty deep water stuff. So you're not wading out there too far. I think, you might be able to walk out through the Tules and put a few decoys and try to shoot off the edge, but mostly I think it's boat access. So.
Gotcha. Do you think it helps you as a biologist to have hunted a lot of these areas and then work on them afterwards, where it's like, okay, I'm hunting, I could see this place, I would do this over here, and then you know, years later, you have a grant opposed to maybe some of the SoCal places that you worked on?
Yeah, I mean, when, as you know, my hunting background, I hunt ducks too. I hunt mostly public areas up here in Northeastern California. So when I'm designing, you know, projects, I'm trying to keep in mind like where I'm putting islands, or, you know, if I'm having to remove trees, I don't want to, you know, like try not to just nuke everything. So it gives guys a place to hunt and hide off the edge. And I mean, we're trying to, you know, after we're building levees and refurbishing levees, you know, they're pretty well barren. So we're trying to go back and plant grasses and get things established. So guys can hide, or, you know, tule transplants, you know, try to get tule transplants going in a lot of the, you know, units that we're having to do a lot of cut and fill and leveling, you know, we're going back and trying to get a jump start on growth like that. So, you know, guys do have a place to hide outside of, you know, just trying to hide in an open pond with no cover or anything like that. You know, you try to play the wind direction with some of the islands, and, you know, knowing what the prevailing winds are, or, you know, trying to develop things in a way that, you know, is going to help guys when they do go out there and hunt some of these units. So, that we're rehabbing. So yeah, try to use my experience the best I can to make an impact when it comes to that.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept. And Jeff, you brought it up, because a lot of the biologists that we have, you know, say you're in the Sac Valley or you're in the grasslands, like, yeah, the grasslands has how many hundreds of clubs, and you're not going to be able to hunt more than maybe a handful on invite. So half the work you do, you never even get to go hunt or hunt it previous to doing the work. So that's a little bit of a bonus for being up there.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, most of my project work up here, and our project work, CWA's work up here, is, like I said, 80 to 85% is on public areas, just because I don't have that contingent of duck clubs to work on. So.
Yeah. And I'll kind of roll that into a question that I normally get two or three times a year. And I'll leave this one to Jeff, since he started the hunt program, but why doesn't CWA have a property in the Northeast zone? I normally get that question a couple times a year, and we've touched on it a little bit, but not directly relating to the hunt
program. Well, it's not something that we haven't talked about. But I mean, I think you got to realize, you know, the Northeast zone, we had a property that was kind of close to being, you know, going through, but it didn't work out. But anyways, you know, down here, we could definitely hunt from October through the end of January, right? But up there, I mean, obviously the first few weeks are really, really good. And then you could be completely frozen out by the first week of December. So, you know, for us, let's say if we had a rice ranch, right? And there's 1,000 acres of rice, and we had hunts, it would have to be more of a, like the refuges are up there, kind of come and go, you know, because the birds, a lot of the time, they're either there or they're not. So if you have someone that drew up there and they're driving 4 hours, and we have, you know, 5 groups on 1,000 acres or whatever it may be, and it's completely frozen, you know, that's hard too. So it would have to work like just like the refuges up there. You'd probably do some draws in October. Then after that, it'd probably like a first come, first serve fee or something like that. But yeah, Greg might have his own opinion on that.
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely, like, I mean, Jeff, you know, sometimes like Klamath Basin and even Fall River, I mean, they're ducks there one day and they're gone the next.
Literally.
So yes. Try to schedule something in November or December and make it work for somebody driving 4 or 5 hours to go hunt is tough. I mean, it's just from like Klamath perspective. I mean, not growing up there as a kid, I mean, you go up there, drive around. I mean, the ducks are always on the new water. I mean, that goes even for the wildlife areas. I mean, you might, and a lot of these places are so big, you know, the state areas, 16,000 acres, 17,000 acres. I mean, they could be flooding up one unit. Other stuff been flooded for a month. You drive out there, might not see a duck, and they could be across the other side of Ash Creek, just piling in some new water pond. So it's, yeah, I mean, it's a tough one as far as the private lands program, you know. I know we have a lot of the private land hunt program stuff as well. It's just, I don't have the duck clubs per se, yeah, that to draw from like the valley and
the numbers grassland. Just don't add up. Like logistically, yes, it's very hard, but you know, how many duck clubs are in the Sacramento Valley? And we've been lucky enough now to own two of them, talking about Sanborn and Butte Creek, or the Delta, you know, the numbers just aren't up there in the Northeast. There's not just a ton of duck clubs where every year multiple come for sale and we can go look at and go prospect. It's just not something. And not to say we're never interested, but it's just a harder place for us to put a foothold in.
Yeah. I mean, we would love a place up there. That's for sure. But, yeah, there's challenges just like anything, but we had some hunts up there early on in the hunt program with Rick Maher, who was the regional biologist before Greg. He had some rice ranches, et cetera, but it was a to be determined hunt. And it was kind of like Greg says, like, hey, the birds just showed up. You need to be here in 2 days. And, you know, that's how it was. And then, yeah. You know, so that's just how the Northeast is. As everyone knows, it can be some of the world-class hunting, but if you time it wrong, you know, you might see 100 ducks in one day. You know, it's very different from the valley, but it can be phenomenal hunting, typically low pressure, good working birds, etc. But you just don't see the volume, and you don't have those areas like here that's just continuous water, duck clubs, refuges, right. Closed zones, all that good stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, that's why I think, you know, Klamath is so special, because you do have that huge kind of continuous areas when everything's flooded up, and then, you know, you got the, you know, northern lakes, et cetera, in Oregon, so you could plan out a hunt for a while, and even if there's no birds in this area, you can go to another area. But, you know, if you're hunting Modoc Refuge, and they ain't there,
yeah, you're,
you know.
Right, I mean, like I said, Klamath, I mean, it's so big. I mean, just because you're not seeing birds on one spot, I mean, they're somewhere. They're always somewhere. It's just, there's a lot of drive time associated with finding them sometimes.
Talk about leaving. I had a hunt up there as a junior hunt when they, you know, would open the refuge past noon or whatever the cutoff time was, one. And we scouted a field and the birds were just piling in there. And literally the next day, just watched them fly south, and not a bird came into that field. And like you talked about, thousands of ducks could be in one field one day, and the next day they're completely gone. I mean, just gone.
Yeah,
just, right.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's humbling. It can be very humbling.
No, it is. I mean, we had a very similar story. You know, we were hunting in Modoc and hunting some wild rice up there, and my dad had been doing some work for the rancher up there, so he said we can hunt on opening day. So like we'd kind of been scouting it out. We were working on his house and all that good stuff. And I mean, the place was loaded. I mean, as loaded as you can be, predominantly all mallards. And, you know, we even scouted the day before and we're like, this is going to be just epic. And there was never a time that I'd be like, hey, we're going to shoot 7 green for everyone. That was the time. And we were kind of even talking about it, how epic it was going to be. You know, it's Northeaster, it's on the opener, and sure enough, you wake up and it's frozen. And the ducks are like literally, you know, there's a percentage of the ducks there. And like we go up to the ponds and like they're on the ice. There's a small little section open and you know, shooting time comes around. I mean, there were some birds around, but we're like, what happened? The most of them just gone, you know, and that's what happened up there.
Jeff, you were a local up there in Fall River. I mean, how about all the Fall River stuff? I mean, it's just like the timing play as far as when things freeze around there and when the birds hit the river and open water. I mean, it's just a total timing thing.
Yeah. No, 100%.
You want to talk about the Fall River hunting escapades, Jeff?
Oh, those are long gone. All
downhill. Those are under your hat as well. Keeping those ones quiet, huh?
Keeping them quiet. Oh, a lot of things change. Man, I haven't been up there in a while, but just like anything.
When's the last time you hunted there?
Gosh darn. At least 5 years, I'm going to say, which is sad. No, we did some late season goose hunts up in Big Valley. So I'll claim that one. But, you know, it's been a while. I mean, you know, growing up there and you go to Modoc and Ash Creek or wherever, or, you know, Willow Creek. It's just vastly different. And I remember the first time like hunting Sac Refuge down here, I was 14 or 15 and just like, oh my God, like the number of birds is nuts. You know what I mean? You'd see more ducks in one day down here than you might see all season up there in parts, right? Right. It's just is what it is. I remember I shot my first snow goose and there was a sporting goods store in the Bay Area. Gosh, what was that called? It just closed apparently. Anyways, I was telling a friend of mine, like, hey, you know, I shot a snow goose. And some guy was like, you shot a snow goose? Who cares? And he was like, well, it's like shooting a honker down at, you know, San Luis or whatever. And the guy was like, oh, I guess that's cool. I was like, at that time, there was no snow geese in that area. Like, you'd see them flying, but like, no one shot them. And now in the Northeast zone, you know, snows and specks in the spring, I mean, they're everywhere. But it wasn't like that at all when I was growing up. Not at all.
That's what I heard. Yeah, that's what a lot of the guys now. And now you drive through Fall River, or, I mean, Big Valley. I mean, it's unreal. It can be unreal during the spring.
Yeah.
Talk about a humbling experience is trying to hunt them as well. Oh man, that's,
oh gosh.
It's like chasing your tail sometimes, trying to get on some of those birds. You powder them, you think you got it figured out, and you try to hunt them, and then gosh, they're quarter mile away and you have a chance. You know, it's a tough one. But yeah, I mean, it's the funny thing too. And, you know, I've heard that too. A lot of the old timers, like, these things just show up. They're, you know, they're just wrecking havoc on some of the ag guys' farm ground up there. I mean, they're trying to chase them off any chance they get. But, you know, the funny thing is, like, during the fall, like, there's nothing. I mean, very, very few, like Big Valley, Fall River Valley, like, you know, historically there was a lot in Klamath, but even I think that has dwindled to some degree. And a lot of those specks and the snows will just bypass a lot of that during the fall and just go right down to the valley and eat rice.
Oh, 100%. Like literally you start seeing harvesters in September and like, then you start hearing specks at night and you know, people are flooding up or whatever. But again, that wasn't the case. I mean, you guys probably remember like Tule Lake openers. You know, there'd be like no geese there or specks on the youth hunt. And then between the youth hunt and the opener, like they show up and it's just like game on, you know?
Yeah.
But I think a lot of them just cruise right down.
No, it's the like you just talked about. I mean, you hear them start coming down in September and then they start going back north. I mean, I've heard them into May. It's like the turnaround of those birds to go back and nest and then come back again is just amazing. You know, where they're going in the timeline, like middle of May, they're still flying over my house here in Reading. It's wild.
I mean, there was a good group down here next to Denverton, you know, into May.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, what are you guys doing down here? You know? But I think that's kind of, you're seeing a little bit more and more of that. I mean, there was a bunch of snows that were stuck at Sac Refuge all last summer, you know, probably some AI birds, but they were there all summer. So
yeah, they never left.
Yeah, they did ban a bunch of them apparently, but
wow.
Yeah. That would be interesting if you see that, like, you know, specks hanging around here all summer, which I've heard rumors of, you know, a group of specks down in the Delta that haven't left.
Right.
But, you know, pretty nuts.
Huh?
Things are changing. Going back to some of your stuff, Greg, I mean, what's like one project that you're like most proud of all Southern California, you know, your entire career, Northern California, you know, what's the one project at the end of your career you could point to and be like, that one was it?
Well, like I said, I mean, touched on before, like the amount of work and what we kind of, what was there when we first showed up at Butte Valley to, you know, we handled it on multiple levels there, right? Like we're trying to make things more efficient on the ground. And then also like the solar components of it. And now we're starting to see, everything's kind of starting to come together as far as all the work we've done and the scale of it. I mean, I think that's probably one of the ones I'm most proud of at this point. I mean, Ash Creek is about the same. I mean, we've been through a lot of that and rehabbed it and carved out new wetlands and brood ponds. And I think both those areas are some of my, you know, what I'm very proud of, as far as working for CWA and been able to implement those on the ground and seeing what we started with to what's taking place now and what the managers have the ability to do and the efficiency and the extra acres that can flood up. I think that's kind of what I'm most proud of at this point, work on some of those public areas like that. So,
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Well, congrats on that. I hope to go to Butte Valley one day. But did any of you guys put in for MODOK, or I'm guessing
I put in for MODOK. One of the things we're doing over there, just to touch on the Klamath Basin a little bit, what we got going on. We got Mark Henley is kind of spearheaded about a $2.5 million grant from the state to help out with a bunch of infrastructure related projects, new lift pumps, particularly. We're doing one as of right now over at Fry's Island. So we had redone the Fry's Island wetland units. That was a NACA grant a few years ago. That was a unit with all the trees in it. It's kind of a cool little wetland unit there at Lower Klamath. They don't have too many like that, but we had redone some of that a couple of years ago. And now they're dependent on water deliveries from the irrigation district to flood or irrigate, which is sometimes tough depending on timing. And so the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is a little bit constricted as far as what they can do. So one of the things they brought up is they'd like to be able to ability to pump directly out of Sump 1B and flood up existing prize seasonal wetlands. That's the existing seasonals. There's like, I think it's unit D, E, and F, and the north of that is A, B, and C. One of our NACA projects that's in the new grant is to develop kind of a walking wetland style unit up on the ABC units, perimeter levees, filling a bunch of ditches. And the feds are in the process. That's always been like in the lease land program, so the Bureau of Rec. So it kind of limited their control of what could be planted and the timing of flood up or when it was rotated into wetlands. They're putting it now into more what's the co-op program, which they can more control of what's left in the field, when it's flooded, how long it's maintained as wetlands. So the hope is that we get this new NACA grant funded, develop the infrastructure up there so they can flood it. But this new pump is going to supply both those halves of Fry's Island. It's kind of an innovative new design. I'm pretty excited about it, actually. One of the main problems over there in Tule Lake is they're all of all their lift pumps, they're pumping water into units, out of the sumps, out of the lake. They're always getting bogged down with a bunch of garbage, like the tules and floating whatever. It's a constant problem for managers, and sometimes to the point where they can't even run their pumps during the summer and fall to flood up. So working with a contractor, we kind of developed an off-the-wall thing. It's had screw pump, Archimedes pump. It looks like a big corkscrew. So it's going to be set in the sump. And they use them a lot back in like Canada, in the south, where they're pumping a lot of trash and garbage. And this thing, will chew up a 2x4. It can spit that thing out the backside, and so it's going to chew up all the algae mats, all the garbage coming out of the pump. And the idea is that, the hope is that it's going to take care of that problem so they can pump whenever they want. It'll solve that issue of all the trash. It's really efficient. I mean, this thing's going to put out like 8,000 or 9,000 gallons a minute. Is what it's designed for. And it's running off like a 15 horsepower pump. So pretty efficient.
That's awesome.
I haven't seen them anywhere else. I know of nobody else that has anything like this. I think if this thing works like it's supposed to, it could have a use on, a lot of state wildlife areas, federal wildlife areas, irrigation. I mean, I'm pretty excited about getting this thing built, and we're hoping that it's going to be up and running, by this October and November. So.
Oh, nice. That's good to hear.
So that was one of the things there with that grant, that $2.5 million that we tapped into from the state. We're actually also working with DU on a couple of new lift pump station, one there in the English Channel, one on In Canal, which is going to help with flexibility for the feds to rotate water between the sumps and circulate water for botulism and move more water around easily. So that was also a component. Another one for the lower, for the Klamath there, refuges was, so we're part of that funds were set aside to help offset pumping costs for the refuge. So anything delivering in and water in and out of Tule Lake or Lower Klamath, we're basically paying for the federal power bills. We've been doing that since March. So they've been running some deep wells, keeping like the Stearns units flooded up. It's allowed them to recirculate water, pump water around Lower Klamath and circulate when they did have a lot of water deliveries from Addy River or Addy Canal. To circulate that water around the Lower Klamath. They've been pumping it around Tule Lake. So that's funding source. We're doing it this year, should be doing it again next year and into early 27. So kind of is giving the feds a shot in the arm to do some things that they might not technically typically have the ability to pump or push water around. So that was a big help. One, you know, big shout out to the state of California for stepping up and helping with some of these infrastructure related and pumping cost offset projects at Lower Klamath and Tule Lake. So it's been pretty, that was a pretty awesome of them to get going and help out with that. So,
yeah, no, that all sounds awesome, dude. I'm excited for you guys up there. I got to get back up there. It's been a while since I funded Klamath too. Stay at Carson's house over there.
Yeah.
If I get the invite. Never have gotten the invite.
One day.
Hopefully.
One day. I didn't know you had a place up there, Carson.
Yeah,
he's got pretty quiet.
My dad back
in the day, back in the heyday of Klamath and Tule Lake, decided to buy a house in Doris with his buddies. So that's why I grew up hunting up there, because we'd always go up there and have a house right in the beautiful town of Doris, California, and hop over to Lower Klamath or Tule Lake, or that's when I hunted Butte Valley, and still go up there to try to get up there once or twice a year to duck hunt and then turkey hunt up there, and used to hunt deer up above Butte Valley. But wolves changed that one. So
yeah, that's a whole nother subject, right?
Yeah. That'd be a good podcast. We get a wolf expert on here.
Yeah.
Hey, that'd be interesting. We tried a while ago. Crickets.
Have you guys heard? I haven't talked to Brian Huber in a while. I mean, did they ever send up a banding crew, or have they been up there helping with the airboat, you know, spotlighting and doing it at the Klamath? I know usually they go up there during the summer, and then again once maybe botulism kicks in to help pick up some of the dead birds and sick birds.
I think they had plans to go up there. I don't know if they've made it yet, but I know they were trying to get all the crews ready and all that stuff, but I don't know for certain if they've made it up there yet, but I think they anticipate doing so.
Yep. Gotcha.
Well, cool. Well, Greg, appreciate you coming on today, man. And a lot of information I didn't know about, so keep doing the good work up there and appreciate you, man.
Yeah. No, thanks for having me on. And yeah, you guys have any questions anytime, give me a holler.
Awesome. Thanks, Greg. Somewhere. Appreciate you.
I'm usually on the road.
Awesome. Thanks, Greg.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Save It for the Blind podcast. You can find our podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.